welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now, as promised, switching our focus a bit more to the precious metals sector, especially gold and silver, as we're chatting with one of our favorite regular guests, Jordan Roybern. Jordan is the editor of the Daily Gold. It's been actually a few months since we last had Jordan on the show, let alone on the weekend show. But we really wanted to highlight Jordan's new book entitled Gold and Silver, The Greatest Bull Market Has Begun, a once-in-a-lifetime investment opportunity. Jordan takes us through a number of charts, starting with what really drives gold, some of the relationships to the stock market and other sectors, shares a lot of his technical analysis, drivers for the gold price, and gets into the different classifications of stocks, and then wraps up with his predictions. We're going to break down this book more in chunks and have Jordan explain some of the higher level points here. So Jordan, welcome back to the show, and let's just start off with a general overview of this book. Why did you decide to publish and write this book now? Give us an overview of really what you're trying to encompass within the book, please.
Well, thank you, Corey, for having me back. It's great to be back. I think there's several reasons. I think it's good to, you know, in this industry, get everything down and put into a book occasionally. So this is kind of the third version of something I first wrote in 2015. But this is the most serious version. And I think my, you know, 40,000 foot view of markets has really crystallized. And I hope it will be, or I intend for it to be, a good tool for people who are investing in the sector and have some experience, for them to understand the big picture, but also new people that are coming into the sector. I expect a lot of generalists will be coming into the sector, and this could be a helpful guide for them. Some parts of the book are probably stronger than others, but I think overall it can be a very good guide for generalists or the layperson to help them understand markets and secular trends, and then also a focus on gold and silver and the stocks and kind of the important factors and drivers that can push this secular bull market along. And I think the timing is also really important. I mean, I was working on this in 2022 and 2023, but things were different as far as the driving forces of gold and the fundamentals. I mean, you had gold making a pretty big divergence from real interest rates. And so I kind of wanted to let that play out. And at the same time, I was talking about the cup and handle pattern quite a bit. And there was still this question of, you know, how much more can precious metals really move as long as the stock market is in a secular bull? And so I think that conundrum, I mean, it's still ongoing today. But as we've seen the breakout from the cup and handle, and the sector is starting to take a step here, this could be a really important inflection point the beginning of this year, and we'll see if that's proven correct over the coming months. But when you're at secular turning points, I mean, there's only, gosh, you know, 3-4, maybe a handful of those in the last 100 years. So the timing is really good, where we're coming to the end of a secular bull in U.S. stocks, and in a secular bull in gold and silver and hard assets is really just getting going and maybe taking the next step. I mean, there is some overlap historically, and I talk about that in the book, but I think that the timing is really good, because I think if I waited another year or two, you know, it might have been too late. And at the same time, yeah, I mean, maybe it would have, the perfect timing probably would have been 6 months ago or so. But, you know, when you're writing a book, you can never time it perfectly.
Well, Jordan, we're just glad the book is out and that we're discussing it. And I do hope it helps a lot of new investors that find the sector. You kind of kick it off with what gold even is. And in a nutshell, it's money. And it's actually an uncurrency. It's like a currency, but it's a way of hedging against all the other risk in other fiat currencies. And you make a point in the first couple of chapters about digging into the correlation it has with bonds, interest rates, and the currencies, especially real inflation-adjusted interest rates. So maybe weave that component in as far as one of the key drivers for the yellow metal.
Yeah, I mean, the major driver for gold is that inverse correlation to real interest rates. So that historically has been the biggest driver, although it's interesting because tying in the bond market is very important. And so, not to get off track with respect to real interest rates, but we're deviating a little bit from that right now. And we also did at certain points in the 70s. So it still is the number one driver of gold. And I mentioned in the book, I mean, PIMCO did a study of this at some point, and so they found that the real 10-year yield, the inverse correlation there, that's actually the strongest fundamental indicator for gold. But there were some points in the 70s where there were just sharp moves in real interest rates in either direction. And, you know, I think we could see the same this time around, given that you have a secular bear market in bonds. And so, not to deviate from real interest rates, but the secular bear market in bonds, people don't realize we've only had one of those in the last 100 years. I mean, until 2020, basically from 1920 to 2020, there was only one secular bear market in bonds. And that was about, you know, 1965 to 82. And so the indicator I use for that is the 80-month moving average for total real return for bonds. That's just a total return adjusted for inflation. And so when that data series lost the 80-month moving average in the mid-60s, that's when bond returns were bad, for lack of a better word, you know, until the early 80s. And so there's only been one of those in the last 100 years. And that's something that nobody talks about. I think few people realize it. And so that changes the correlation with real interest rates a little bit. But that is such a powerful, the fact that we're clearly in a new secular bear for bonds. You know, after COVID, it lost that 80-month moving average, and it hasn't even come close to regaining it. So that is such a powerful development, I think, for just all markets, for, you know, for in secular trends in general. And so the people, they don't really have a playbook for what happens. So I try and write a little bit about that in the book, also touch on the secular bear, I think, from 1900 to 1921, or, you know, 1906 to 1921, that was also a secular inflation period. But it's just such a powerful development.
Jordan, there are a number of secondary drivers that you also point to, those being the yield curve, U.S. dollar index, and central bank demand. We can also tie in how gold is done against foreign currencies, so not just the U.S. dollar. Talk to us about how you can balance out these secondary drivers as well in terms of what can drive the gold price.
Yeah, I mean, it's first and foremost, it's real interest rates, as we said, and then we have the bond market as well. But there's other drivers. There's the yield curve, when you get a steepening in the yield curve, and the yield curve has steepened, I want to say considerably, but, you know, more than a little bit over the last quarter or two, and precious metals have continued to perform well. You know, I'm not real keen on the dollar. I mean, that the dollar is a driver, but when you look at gold against foreign currencies, like, that tends to be a big leading indicator technically for gold and dollars. So that's an important technical thing I look at. The dollar itself, you tend to see gold lead the dollar, just like it leads real interest rates. You get gold leading both ways at major turning points. So that's why I don't talk about the dollar a whole lot. But what's really interesting is the secular trend in the dollar in the stock market, it tends to be aligned. So if you look at the secular bear in the dollar that we had from, you know, 2001 to 2008 or 2001 to 2011, I mean, that was almost perfectly aligned with the secular bear in U.S. stocks. You didn't have a perfect secular bull from 82 to 2000, but most of that period, the dollar was going up. I think it was going up from, you know, 93 or 94 until 2001. So now we're seeing something really similar where the dollar put in this low in 08 or a slightly higher low in 2011. And it hasn't been pretty, but it's been trending up since that point. So you have a clear secular bull in U.S. stocks and also the dollar. So I don't necessarily agree with, I mean, I guess it can be true in a short-term aspect where the weak dollar is good for the market. But when you take a 40,000-foot view, you have to understand that the secular trend of the dollar and U.S. stocks is aligned. And so I don't see the dollar going into this big bear market without the stock market going into a secular bear. So those two are aligned. And I think that's a important point that people need to understand. You know, you're not going to see a bear market in the dollar and then the stock market, you know, keep running, you know, to higher highs over the coming years. So those are aligned. And Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, this bull market is kind of, not kind of, but it is breaking some fundamental norms where you look at the secular trends in the dollar and even the declines that we've had, the cyclical declines that we've had in the dollar when it's in a secular bull, you don't tend to get really good moves in precious metals when that happens. So that's another point that I made in the book. But on the other hand, you look at what's going on now and, you know, precious metals have performed reasonably well, despite the fact that the dollar is in a secular bull alongside U.S. stocks still being in a secular bull. And so, you know, eventually, to tie it into today a little bit, eventually, when the secular bull ends in U.S. stocks and more money starts coming out of stocks and goes into gold, I mean, gold and precious metals are really going to go vertical.
Well, Jordan, let's dig into that topic a little bit further. This has been a key point you've made a number of years that, you know, in real terms, the bull market in gold and precious metals equities is going to be when you see the corrective move in the general U.S. equities. And they've actually been going up in tandem, which is a little unusual, but that can happen for periods of time. And if you look at something like a Dow gold ratio chart or an S&P gold ratio chart, it's been compressing lower and lower, kind of flatlining, because they've been kind of moving in tandem. Break down for people listening why you think the eventual rollover in U.S. equities will be such a seminal moment for the longer-term secular bull in precious metals.
Well, if you think about it, stocks and bonds are the major asset classes that compete with precious metals. And I obviously make this point in the book, but the 1970s, and I think we're really we're mirroring that period where 65, you had the bonds go into a secular bear, and then you had the stock market itself at the end of 1968. So bonds this time around, I think bonds going into a secular bear are going to lead to the stock market going into a secular bear and the dollar around the same period. You know, it's possible that, because if you look at the last secular bear in the 2000s, the stock market peaked, I think, over a year before the dollar did. But anyway, so if you think about it, all these big funds and organizations, you know, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, family offices, who they manage millions and millions of dollars. And when you had a secular bull in bonds, you know, they could get really good income from that, you know, 2-4%. I mean, that's significant income when you're managing $50 million or $100 million or even $20 or $30 million. And so money has come out of bonds. A little bit of it has gone into precious metals, but most of that has gone into the stock market. And again, you look at intermarket analysis and how gold's performing. Gold is outperforming everything. It's doing really well. It's crushing bonds. But U.S. stocks is the last thing that gold basically needs to conquer. But that's aside from bonds, it's really the biggest asset class. And so, again, we look at how gold is performing. It's clear that's the one thing that's holding it back. And you look at a chart of gold against the S&P, and, you know, you hear these statistics like, oh, well, gold, it's outperformed the stock market in the last 13 months or 2 years. It sounds good, but if you look at a chart, there's no clear uptrend yet with respect to gold against the S&P. Now, it is, you know, I think yesterday we closed at 0.48. If we do get an explosive move with respect to gold against the S&P above 0.50, which we're really close to, you know, that would be a major turning point, because all this money that has been staying in stocks, when some of that starts to move into gold, you know, not only do you have a real bull market, but like I said earlier, you're going to see gold and silver really go vertical at that point, because there's nowhere else for that money to go. And so with the secular bear in bonds, again, initially, the majority of that money has moved into stocks, you know, probably bigger companies, these organizations and funds with, you know, $100 million and such. You know, they can get their income now from the dividend aristocrat companies. But when the stock market cracks, some of that money, it's not going to go back into bonds. You know, the only place it can go at that point is gold, and then secondarily silver. And also, it's not going to go into crypto. I mean, crypto since 2011 has basically traded with the NASDAQ. So that to me, I mean, just thinking about where we are now in the next few years, like when that happens, that's going to be such a major turning point for precious metals. And by the way, historically, you look at my gold against the 60/40 portfolio chart, and that's actually, it's trying to break out of a 10-year base, like a perfect 10-year base. And so we really need gold to outperform the stock market for that breakout to be confirmed and really have the potential to accelerate. But, you know, historically, you go back and you look, the secular bull markets in gold, you know, 2001 to 2011, 1970 to 1980, even the 1930s, those were driven by gold outperforming the 60/40 significantly and the stock market significantly. You know, and that's because naturally, when gold is in a new secular bull market and one that can last a decade or longer, that is fueled and sustained by money moving out of conventional assets like stocks and going into gold. Like what we've seen happening, I mean, I write about in the book, it's very similar to what's gone on in the mid-60s. So it kind of puts in context what has happened today, except in the mid-60s, gold stocks, which were the proxy for gold and silver, they outperformed the stock market, even though the stock market kept rising until the end of 1968. So I don't know. I mean, we could be maybe in the next like year or two or next 12 months, we could be in a period where precious metals do outperform before we, you know, get into the turn for the U.S. stock market. But I think the history in the book explains it pretty well, probably better than my, you know, roundabout answer here.
Well, Jordan, to this point about just how well U.S. stocks have done, it's actually crazy to think about. You combine the U.S. markets to the rest of the markets in the world. The U.S. markets are worth as much as the rest of the world combined. So it really has been this U.S. dominance theme that we've seen. You do have a chapter, a part two chapter in this book that talks about de-dollarization. It's not written by you, but is this a big picture theme then? It sure sounds like it is, where the faltering of the domination of the U.S. tied into financial markets, that is what's held gold back?
Well, yeah, all the money going into U.S. stocks, that has held gold back. But the fact that we're starting to see sovereign wealth funds and central banks, I shouldn't say started to see, but in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years or so, the fact that they've been buying gold, they're diversifying their reserves, that has really helped, or it helped gold during the handle part of the cup and handle pattern. I mean, without central bank buying, gold probably would have dipped to 1500. So that's a new driver, and that has helped the market quite a bit. Again, when it was building the handle on the cup and handle pattern. But yeah, I mean, if you think about, that wasn't a big part of the bull market in the 2000s. In the 1970s, you could say that really helped catalyze that secular bull in the late 1960s. And we were spending and running huge deficits, and other countries were wanting, turning in their dollars for gold. So that helped spring that secular bull. And, you know, maybe this time around, we could say the same thing, that central bank buying in 2018, you know, up until recently, that helped spring, you know, the move off the, you know, 2022 low and 2023 low. And, you know, looking back, we'll probably say the secular bull started at the end of 2023, you know, and then a couple months later, that cup and handle breakout in gold really began it. So yeah, de-dollarization is definitely a huge factor. I'm not an expert in that. That's why I had Vince Lancey write about it, but I don't think it's the most important factor.
Well, Jordan, in lieu of central banks buying gold and seeing it press the bet even higher and higher and bringing in buyers in the East as well as the West, they don't buy silver. So let's weave silver into this discussion. Silver has been money throughout history. It was kind of demonetized and has been labeled as more of an industrial metal. So a lot of the narratives around supply, demand, and industry and what's happening in solar voltaics, but you're looking at this very pragmatically with the charts, looking at silver as a precious metal as well as an industrial metal. What's your outlook on silver?
Well, my outlook would be really bullish over the long term. If you look at what drives silver, it's really gold. I mean, there's no evidence that the industrial side of it means anything. And Yeah, we hear about it now and in recent years where people are talking about silver. They talk about the industrial side. But if you look at the charts and what's happened in the market, that has like zero impact on the price. Like silver is a leverage play on gold. Same thing with the gold stocks. They're leverage plays on gold. And, you know, again, looking at gold against the stock market, gold against the 60-40 portfolio, when gold is outperforming conventional assets, that's when silver and the gold stocks can really outperform. And so going back a moment, this is another reason why gold outperforming the stock market is important. Because when gold outperforms the stock market, you're going to get more generalist money and just more capital in general moving into the precious metals sector. And when that happens, and again, to see this on the charts, that's gold outperforming the stock market, gold outperforming the 60-40. When that happens, capital goes into gold, and there's so much of it that it spills over into the leverage plays like gold stocks and silver. And so that's the important tie in there between gold outperforming stocks and conventional assets. But, you know, silver, it does have that incredible base. So I should say it's in position to make a really explosive move when it breaks, I think, 37, 38. I mean, there's very, very little resistance from 37, 38 up to 50. And, you know, when silver breaks 50, if you look at commodities that made those kind of breaks, and specifically copper and oil, they can make really dramatic moves in a short amount of time. So silver, I mean, I hate to be super bullish as I am in this book over the long term, but you know, when silver makes a clean breakout above $50, I mean, that can go to 100 in a year. That's what the history of those kind of breakouts shows you. So yeah, I think the upside for silver is really incredible. And if I'm right, and you're going to see the secular bull market last another decade or maybe even longer than that, the potential for silver, I mean, the numbers are really shocking. So I would say the potential for silver is just, yeah, it's shocking. And so based on that, I am really bullish. It doesn't mean that you should, you know, buy anything with silver in the name or look for, you know, anything that's tiny and has silver in the name. But yeah, the potential there is really spectacular. Although, you know, gold tends to be more consistent as far as performance. The moves in silver tend to be shorter and more volatile. And last thing, on the industrial side, I mean, maybe that will help silver during cyclical downturns and larger corrections. Maybe that will give silver more of a floor or a higher floor. But at this point, you know, the industrial stuff sounds exciting, but again, historically, it's had no impact on the price. So it'll be interesting to see if that changes. Maybe it will. My guess would be no. That silver, for the most part, will be driven by, you know, speculation in gold and precious metals and gold's performance, because it is a leverage play. That's what it comes down to.
You know what else can be a leverage play? The gold stocks. You break down the mining stocks and the junior stocks. I find it very interesting to see your analysis of what happens during bull markets and then the bear markets that follow each, but also how the ETFs have changed the investment landscape into the precious metal stocks, especially gold stocks. Jordan, what can you share with us in terms of what you're expecting, potential leverage for these gold stocks, but then also just how these ETFs have, in a way, altered the investment landscape there?
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen a few people talk about this, but I don't think it's been mentioned really in our industry that much. And so we had the gold and silver. Well, the first gold ETF came about, I think, November 2004. And so before that point, like, people forget this. So before the mid-2000s, and it took a little while for it to catch on. So before the mid-2000s, if you wanted to buy gold, you couldn't do it with a simple brokerage account. Like, you'd have to call a futures broker, buy a futures contract, go to a coin shop. So then if you're managing a portfolio and you want to get exposure to gold or even silver, how did you do it? Well, you bought the gold stocks. You bought the miners. So miners up until that point, you know, just putting the secular trends aside, I mean, generally in the 80s and 90s, miners traded at much higher valuations. And that was because there was a lot of money that really couldn't buy gold or silver in an easy way. So the fact that that has come about has removed quite a bit of capital that used to buy miners. So that development, I think, is the biggest reason why miners have underperformed. The second biggest reason is we've been in a secular bear since 2011. So naturally, in a secular bear, valuations are going to be lower. So that, to me, is the two big reasons. You know, there's all these other reasons like, oh, there's morons running these companies and they don't know what they're doing and there's bad management. Yeah, they all may be true, but the creation of these ETFs and the fact that we've been in a secular bear, I mean, for me, that explains 95% of it. And then my third point, which I'd add on to, is, you know, with respect to gold stocks, the inflation adjusted gold price over the long term is an excellent indicator. And it makes sense because, you know, gold stocks are going to follow their margins. You know, how much cash are the mines generating? And obviously the gold price is a huge factor in that, but there's also costs. And so if you're looking at the gold price divided by inflation, it's a very good proxy for the margins of these miners and, you know, whether they're shrinking or rising. And, you know, you think about when we were building the handle and the cup and handle pattern from the summer of 2020, that peak, until late 2023. I mean, how much inflation did we have during that period? I mean, yes, you know, gold corrected, it consolidated, it was holding around 2000 for a good portion of that handle. But by the end of 2023, if you look at the inflation adjusted gold price, I mean, I think it was like at one point it was down like 25% off the high. So that really explains that third point. And, you know, cost inflation, rising inflation also impacts the miners. But usually that comes after the inflation hits. You know, it's kind of the beginning when it starts to hit. You know, that's when gold and the miners will perform the best in cyclical terms.
Well, Jordan, when you bring it present today and you see the high margins that these companies have, they're the fattest margins in the history of the gold sector right now. Maybe not on inflation adjusted terms, but just in nominal terms, these are fat margins. And the net present value of a lot of the projects, economic studies come out, PEAs, PFS, and you dive into these companies and you talk a little bit in your book about the net present value of the gold mining sector. It's a pretty wild disconnect right now between where some of these projects are valued on paper and where the stock price and the valuations are trading in the market. What would you say as far as the current setup we see with record high gold prices, really high NPVs on projects, but really low valuations in a lot of companies still?
It's one of the best setups of all time. I mean, it really is. I know it's hyperbole to say that, but it's really not when you look at the various factors. One thing to tie it back to what we were just talking about, look at the inflation adjusted gold price. I mean, that thing is in a massive 45-year base. I haven't checked it in the last couple of days since the end of the last month, you know, because the CPI updates monthly. But we could just say that's breaking out, or it's on the cusp of breaking out of a 45-year base. So what that tells you, a breakout from that base tells you that you're going to see the gold price rise, you know, significantly in inflation adjusted terms. So that's really, really good for miners. In layman's terms, that means if we see gold in the next 12 months go from, you know, 2,900 to 4,000, let's say, you're going to see the majority of that move, the vast majority of it, is going to go right to the bottom line. Now, on the other hand, maybe if gold goes at that point, if it goes from 4,000 to 4,500, maybe that $500, maybe 400 of that will be inflation, or 350 of that will be inflation, and you'll see less leverage. So that's the first thing, is based on the gold, the inflation adjusted price of gold, we're really in an outstanding moment, because again, it's on the cusp of breaking out of a 45-year base. Secondly, valuations. Now, I have various price to cash flow charts, and I have them going back, not in the 80s, but I did find one that shows price to cash flow of miners in the 70s. And so based on all that, generally the miners have traded at anywhere from 6x cash flow to 25x cash flow on the higher side. You know, or we can say maybe 6x, or we could say, you know, eight, most of the, even if we compress that, most of the time we could say 8x to, you know, 18x or something like that. Now, 2-3 months ago, the price to cash flow for miners was at 8x. So historically, you have this range of 6x to 25x as far as the valuation. And again, a couple months ago, trading at around 8x. So, you know, the based on that, the miners could go, they could easily just go 50% higher and trade at 12x, which would be in the middle, you know, of their historic valuations. And finally, on top of that, I do have one chart looking at, and it's been floating around Twitter. It gets updated every month. If you look at the amount of money, the amount of capital that is in all miners or all miner ETFs divided by just the capital that's in all stock ETFs, that's at a 20-year low, or it's very close to a 20-year low. So that tells you nobody is really invested in this sector. So yeah, it's almost a perfect setup. It's one of the best setups of all time. And another point, if you look at the Huey, the XAU, the GDX, GDXJ, there's a sub-index I talk about. We all know the CDNX, you know, the TSXV, the junior index, although it contains, you know, biotech and tech companies in it. There's a smaller version of that index that it's only gold companies, it's 30 companies. You look at that index, that's really close to breaking out from a 10-12 year base. You look at, again, the XAU, GDX, GDXJ, those are all really close to breaking out of 4 or 5 year bases. So you look at all these factors and yeah, it's really one of the best setups ever. And we're in position to, you know, potentially have a spectacular next 12 to 24 months.
Let's bring it full circle here, Jordan, to wrap us up. We don't want to give away everything, but you wrap up the book with your predictions for gold, for silver, and you back it all up with a lot of these charts in that chapter and also in the appendix. What can you share with us? What are some of the potential levels we could be seeing here?
Corey, it's pretty nuts. I mean, if you just look at the math and you look at what happened at secular peaks, at the secular peak of 1980 and then during the Great Depression, it's pretty out there. I mean, for gold, I would just say, I think based on the math, like 20,000 or 25,000 an ounce is just like, that's a done deal. Like that's pretty easy. You know, I think 30,000 is not unreasonable. And, you know, if you think about the gold silver ratio, again, there's been 3, 4, 5 times historically when it's gotten as low as, you know, 15X or so, maybe even 13X. And, you know, if gold's going to get to 20,000, 25,000, that means silver is going to get to 1,000. But, you know, it's even possible we could get to 50,000 gold and, you know, 2,000 silver. Now, this sounds really extreme, but looking at all this, I mean, we're not saying this is going to happen the next 2 or 3 years. Like, these targets really don't mean anything for anybody in their financial prospects for today or even in the next 5 years. This is something I'm looking at 10 years, maybe even 15 years from now, depending on how the secular bull market plays out. I mean, I do think that, you know, there is potential for the rest of this decade, or you get into 2028, 2029, you know, you could see cyclically, you know, maybe gold could get to 7,000-8,000, you know, and silver gets to, you know, 120, 150, something like that. And at that point, you would probably get a nasty bear market like the one we had 74 to 75 in 2008. So that's something that people have to understand is after every great run in precious metals, you're going to get a 60% bear market in the stocks, and you'll probably silver as well. So, you know, to get to those kind of targets, you know, you're looking at some incredible moves, but also a nasty bear market along the way, maybe even two. So, yeah, I mean, those targets are interesting to look at, but the thing that people need to understand is we have an incredible cyclical opportunity here over the next few years. But after that, you're looking at, you know, you're looking at a 60% bear market, most likely. That's the one thing they need to understand. The second thing is, you know, this secular bull market in hard assets, this is going to run another 10 years minimum, you know, maybe even 15 years. When you look at the history, you look at how long it takes for these things to unfold, this is going to be with us a very long time. And, you know, something I've done in the last year or so, I'm trying to buy good companies that are really good values, that based on current metals prices, you know, can perform well. And then, so obviously, if metals prices go up a lot, they can perform really well. So I'm more focused on that, trying to find the best companies, the best values, a little more than timing the market. You know, timing the market is fine. You know, when we see things get really overbought, you know, you can sell and trim profits. And, you know, when things get oversold and the things are really good value, that's the time to buy. I would focus a lot more on that than trying to worry about the, you know, price levels or these targets in gold and silver. Targets really don't help you as an investor.
Yeah, very good comment there, Jordan. But man, you know that a lot of those gold and silver bugs are going to love those price targets, even if they are 10 to 15 years down the road. Either way, all of you, if you want some more information on Jordan's book, you can email us or also visit his website, The Daily Gold, to find out more about his technical service and get access to that book. Jordan, great having you on the show. Nice job getting this book published now. And everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. We hope you enjoyed our coverage of the markets and of the metals. Be sure to check out our website, kereport.com, and podcast. Just search The KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all our daily editorials, company updates, and the full weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.